All right. Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to Tax Committee for March 6th, 2024. Calling this meeting to order. The first item on our agenda is approval of the minutes from March 5th, 2024. Vice Chair Norris, do I have a motion?
Chair Gomez, I move adoption of the minutes from the March 5th meeting.
Vice Chair Norris has moved adoption of the minutes from March 5th. Is there any discussion on the motion? Not seeing any. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, please say no. Motion carries, and the minutes for March 5th, 2024 are adopted. So we have an agenda that will probably be pretty full today. First, we're going to hear a presentation from our state economist, and then we have two bill hearings after that. So first up, I want to welcome Minnesota state economist Dr. Laura Kolumbakidis to committee. Thank you so much for joining us today. Please introduce yourself as you get started and go ahead with your testimony.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members of the committee. Glad to be here today. For the record, I'm Laura Kolumbakidis, Minnesota state economist. I'm going to start. I'm going to start with the forecast for U.S. corporate profits. I'm going to move to Minnesota's corporate franchise tax revenues over time and then address the volatility of the corporate franchise tax base. So everything I'm talking about is the corporate all day here. Focusing first on the history of corporate profits. Okay. Oh, this graph shows the dollar value or level of U.S. corporate profits. So not Minnesota, but U.S. before tax corporate profits. The dark line shows the history and the current forecast, and the dashed line shows the November forecast, and the gray bars show U.S. recessions. So I'm showing you November and February because, of course, those are the two corporate profits forecasts that informed our forecasts, so our November forecast and our February forecast. So the solid line is the forecast that – oops, what did I do?
Sorry, we're having some tech issues today. Thanks for bearing with us.
No problem. There it goes. Okay, so I will try not to move it again. Sensitive to being touched. All right. Okay, so focused first on the history, so the solid line going off to the right, the history of corporate profits. The graph illustrates the significant run-up in profits since the pandemic recession. This was a period when U.S. corporate profits grew at a compound annual rate of 7.5%. And that coincides with years when Minnesota's corporate tax receipts often exceeded our forecasts, even as we repeatedly raised those forecasts. And if you look at the line since the pandemic recession, you can also it also just gives you a quick indication of the volatility of this of profits, which you know you can see the line is going up and down and up and down. So that's volatility, especially since the recession. Now look at the right-hand side of the graph to see the forecast period. The level of profits is now expected to be higher throughout our forecast period compared to November. Our macroeconomic consulting firm, S&P Global, expects before-tax corporate profits will grow 5.6% this year before experiencing small declines in the next 2 years and pivoting back to moderate growth thereafter. The November forecast, the dashed line, called for a sharper decline and lower levels of profits in the out years. You can see that the sharper decline in the dashed line and then pretty flat after that. The next chart, this chart is one I didn't include when I presented the forecast. This shows how S&P, our macroeconomic forecaster, has changed their corporate profits forecast since February of 2020. The dark blue line shows the history, and the dashed blue line at the top of the chart is our current forecast for U.S. corporate profits, or the February forecast for U.S. corporate profits. All the other lines are previous forecasts by S&P. So the orange dashed line represents U.S. corporate profit forecast in February of 2020. So remember, it's February of 2020, before the pandemic really kicked in. And then you can see that the first two forecasts after the pandemic recession in November 20 and February of 21 were expecting U.S. corporate profits below the February of 2020 level. Beginning with the November of 21 forecast, you can see how S&P has continued to raise the forecast as actual corporate profits continued to come in higher than their forecast. So this is, you can think of this as forecasters sort of chasing what was happening in the corporate sector over time. Minnesota's corporate tax applies to C corporations that do business in the state, so our corporate tax receipts are correlated with the U.S. corporate profits that you see here and in the previous slide. So this chart shows receipts. This chart shows Minnesota corporate franchise tax receipts by fiscal year since FY 2000. The dark blue bars are history, and the gray bars on the right represent our forecast. The lime green in those bars represent the estimated impact of legislative changes enacted in the last session. So I also didn't use this in my forecast presentation, but the forecasts themselves are the entire height of the gray bars, but the green part is the estimated impact of legislative changes. This chart, if you look at the growth rates and sort of the run-up since 2020, it illustrates, it just gives you a visual illustration of a correlation between that what was happening in corporate profits and what happened in Minnesota receipts. The next chart I did include in my forecast presentation, and this one shows biennial Minnesota corporate tax revenue. The blue bars show the history, and the green bars show our forecast for corporate tax revenue in the current and next biennia. From the 14-15 biennium through the 18-19 biennium, Minnesota corporate tax receipts averaged $2.7 billion per biennium. In the FY 22-23 biennium, during that post-pandemic run-up period in U.S. corporate profits, Minnesota corporate tax receipts were twice as large at $5.7 billion. In our current forecast, Minnesota's corporate tax receipts are now expected to average $6.2 billion per biennium in the current biennium and in the next. And then remember again that for FY 24 through 27, these forecasts include the estimated impacts of Minnesota corporate law changes.
Dr. Kolumbakidis, I think Representative Pinto just has a clarifying question.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Really quick, just wondering if these slides are nominal dollars or inflation adjusted. Thank you, Chair.
Dr. Kolumbakidis.
These are all, so far, nominal. Okay.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, Representative, the corporate profits are nominal, and tax revenues come in, not inflation adjusted, they come in a nominal way, so that's what these are. The next chart, so I'm moving now to talking a little bit about, that's the history of corporate receipts, now I'm talking about volatility within corporate receipts. So this chart illustrates Minnesota's tax revenue system. The pie chart shows the share of each tax that each tax contributes to the total tax revenue system. The numbers might not look exactly like something you would pick up off of the Department of Revenue website because we've made some adjustments for consistency, but the general story is there. The sales tax, so the sales tax is the green slice here. The sales tax is generally considered a stable component of Minnesota's tax system, representing now 23% of total revenues, but on average for 2000 to 2009, it was 31%. And so that share has declined. So that's one of the most stable pieces, and that's declined over time. The share of revenues from the individual income tax has increased to an average of 54%. It's now at 54%. And the share of revenues collected from the corporate franchise tax has increased from 6% on average from 2000 to 19 to 9% on average from 21 through 23. So if you look at the individual income tax and the corporate tax together, so those are both income taxes, corporate income and individual income. The corporate is the most volatile, I'll show you that in just a second, of the tax types, and the individual income tax is the second most. Put those together, and in the 2000 to 09 period, the first pie chart there, the share of those two is 53%. In the second pie chart, the FY 10 to 19 is 56%, and then now it's at 63%. So those more volatile pieces have a larger share of total revenues. Finally, I've included a chart that illustrates the volatility of Minnesota's major components of the tax base. So this is from our revenue volatility study, which we do once a year. We do it in the fall. And what we do, and this is required by statute, we measure the volatility of the components of all the tax bases for Minnesota, and we compare them to one another. We also measure the interactions between them, and we get from those, along with those shares that I showed you, we put all of this together as a sort of like a portfolio of taxes, and it gives us the total volatility of the revenue system. And that information we use to produce our recommendation for the size of the state budget reserve. So this chart shows the components of the tax system. It shows the bases, the volatility of the bases of each of these taxes, not the revenue itself, but the base, the underlying volatility from the base. So it's the conditional standard deviation of these major components of Minnesota's general fund tax base. You can think of it as each variable there is how the base of that tax varies relative to its underlying trend. So each tax has a trend, but the actual bases vary around that trend, and then we measure that variability. So what do we see here? We see that the highest volatility component of our tax system is the corporate tax. It's the top line. And the second one, I hope, is the individual income tax. Yes, it is. So the most volatile is the corporate tax. It's not the highest share. You saw that. So high volatility, but a relatively small share. The individual income tax has the highest share, but it's the next highest in volatility. You can also see that the volatility of the corporate tax fell between the recessions, so that 10-year economic expansion that we experienced that ended at the beginning of 2019, corporate tax volatility came down, and it's ticked up a little bit since then. So that ends that concludes my prepared statement, and I'm happy to take questions.
Thank you so much, Dr. Kalimbakidis. Representative Davids.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Doctor, for that presentation. Just a couple questions here. The first one is, from what you said, it sounds like when we raise the corporate franchise tax, we're increasing volatility to the system. Is that a correct statement?
Dr. Kalimbakidis.
Madam Chair, Representative, all other things held equal, that would be the case. However, we generally things are not held equal, and one of the things that happens is that there are correlations between the tax bases. So just like if you have a portfolio of financial assets, you think about not just how one asset moves, but how they move together. And so sometimes that correlation changes, but and when tax laws change, you might change the share of the corporate tax, and you might adjust the shares of other taxes, and so all of that put together forms our volatility measure. So I'm only being cautious about not jumping ahead to what our study might say in the fall. But all of the things held equal, more dependence on a volatile revenue source raises the volatility of the system.
And Madam Chair,
yeah, Representative Davids,
Dr. Kalimbakidis, who bears the brunt of the increase in the corporate franchise tax?
Dr. Kalimbakidis.
Madam Chair, Representative, that's a question that I would put to Department of Revenue and their incident study. And you mean who bears the burden of that tax? Who pays the tax?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and Dr. Kolumbakidis. Basically, is it a regressive or progressive tax? Oh.
And Dr. Kolumbakidis, we went over this yesterday, but we can they kind of read the latest attribution from the tax incidence study to us yesterday, and so we can turn to staff when they have a minute, or I'll see if you have any comments, but we can answer that question if you'd like. Yeah. Dr. Kolumbakidis.
Madam Chair, Representative, I defer to whatever it is the Department of Revenue says in their incident study, because I haven't read the most recent incident study.
Thank you. And
Suits Index, the corporate franchise tax is regressive, the way it looks to me. And thank you. Thank you, Doctor.
Sure. Great. Is there any further questions or comments for Dr. All right. Representative Robbins.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for being here. First, I just wondered, I'd looked on the committee website. Can we get this sent to us?
Yes.
Okay. That would be great. And secondly, on this tax shares of Minnesota revenue system chart, I found the breakdown by decades like a little confusing. And so I just wondered, you know, if you could give us, you can email it to me or something, but I'd like to see how it's changed maybe over that same period, say from 2000 to 2024. But each year, because I think that the decade averaging averages it out in a way that isn't helpful as policymakers. So, you know, for individual years, you know, in say like the 2010 to the 2019, at some points it was as low as 4. And then it was as high as 9. And so I think having it year by year to understand where the breaks are and how that impacted revenue would be more helpful than this sort of decade average. I'm not sure it's as helpful policy making. Thank you.
Great. That sounds like a request for follow-up information, and so we'll work with MMB and our staff to figure out who can get that to you, because I assume that data is available somewhere. Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you. Anything further from any of committee members before we move on to our bills? All right, I'm not seeing any. Thank you so much for this presentation today. We really appreciate you coming. All right. So the first bill that we have is House File 4513. Representative Greenman, welcome to the committee. The chair moves that House File 4513 be laid over for possible inclusion in the 2024 tax bill.
Thank you.
Turn it over to you, Rep. Greenman.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members, and I'm glad to be here with all of you. This is my first time in taxes to present 4513, the corporate tax rate to Nobel. And it's fitting that my first bill in taxes is something that's near and dear to my heart, the rights of Minnesotans to know what's happening in their economy and in their democracy. This is a bill, when we talk about what the bill actually does, it's very simple. It requires the biggest corporations in the United States, corporations making over $250 million in gross sales and receipts, and that are doing business in Minnesota, that their state corporate franchise information from the M4s would be made public after 3 years. This bill ensures that Minnesotans and their elected representatives have the information that we all need to make governing decisions. I mean, how can the public and their elected representatives make decisions about how to structure our corporate tax code if we don't know how it's impacting our biggest companies? And how can we decide where to spend our general fund revenue through direct spending or tax expenditure spending if we don't know who's benefiting from these policies or whether they're achieving their goal? And with the growing power of corporate monopolies, how can we assure the public that corporations are not taking advantage of the secrecy of the tax code to amass more wealth and power in an economy, in our economy, and to influence our government? These are the questions that inspired this bill. It's a simple bill that will not answer all of these questions, but it is a start. It sheds light on how the biggest corporations in the United States are benefiting from and contributing to Minnesota's shared resources. The bill balances the compelling public interest in the right to know and the right of the public to know with safeguards to protect these corporations. Safeguards like it prohibits disclosure of corporations' federal returns. It provides a waiting period of 3 years before information is disclosed, and it applies to all companies, whether they are headquartered here in Minnesota or not, as long as they have sales here. The fact is that this type of disclosure is already happening with a number of different corporate entities, publicly traded companies, nonprofits, unions, and for nonprofit corporations, the disclosure is much more detailed, including the salaries of their staff and other things. And so this is focused on the sales, the expenditures, the kinds of things that are on the M4, where other corporate entities have much more rigorous disclosure. This bill only requires the disclosure of Minnesota's the income, the apportionment factors, the tax deductions, and the tax liabilities. Why do we need this information? Simple. 80% of Americans believe that corporations are not paying their fair share to the common good.
Madam Chair, to that point.
Representative Davids, we're going to wait until Representative Greenman finishes her bill presentation before we move
Thank
to
you,
member
Chair.
Discussion.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Greenman.
Step out of this building and listen to Minnesotans around the state, and you'll hear stories about big corporations that are getting bigger and more powerful. And they're right. The evidence shows that they're right. In the last 30 years, over 75% of industries have gone more concentrated, and it can, if that rate continues to the current day, or to 2070, there will only be one giant corporation left. Corporate monopolies dominate a variety of industries and use their consolidated power to raise prices, lower wages, offshore jobs, squeeze out small businesses, and important to this committee, shirk from contributing to the common good. And most importantly, and important to all of us here, they use their accumulated power in this economy to exert more power on all levels of government and create rules where they can extract more profit at the expense of Minnesota families, farmers, consumers, and communities. Minnesotans are urging us in committee after committee to level the playing field for workers, for families, for farmers, for consumers, an economy that feels really tilted right now. As part of this conversation, the public has the right to know, and we, as their elected representatives, should know how much corporations are paying in taxes, the biggest corporations, how much tax breaks and tax expenditures folks are getting, and who is benefiting from the over $1 billion in tax expenditure spending. This is a bill, it's a simple bill, it's one page, that brings some transparency and trust to the people of Minnesota. So we can, in the slightest way, crack open the books of the wealthiest corporations, if only to see how much they paid in taxes in Minnesota and what breaks they're getting from us. So with that, Madam Chair, I would turn it back over to you for testifiers.
Thank you, Representative Greenman. So we do have a number of testifiers who've signed up, so we're going to call them up. First up is Rebecca Nelson. And on deck is Julie Thompson, if you could just be ready to go when Ms. Nelson is done. Thank you so much for being here. Please just introduce yourself as you go ahead with your testimony, if you don't mind.
Good afternoon, Chair Gomez and members of the committee. My name is Rebecca Nelson. I'm a registered nurse at a large urban hospital in the Twin Cities. I am also a proud member and a board member of the Minnesota Nurses Association. MNA's 22,000 members represent 80% of nurses that work at the bedside in hospitals in Minnesota. As nurses, we see firsthand the impact of a society that denies people basic human rights like housing and health care. Many of the most vulnerable patients we see on a daily basis are there because they lack the sort of stable, affordable health care that exists in every other developed country in the world. Amidst these systemic failures, we know that hospitals, insurers, pharmaceutical companies, and medical device manufacturers are earning enormous profits. In 2023, UnitedHealthcare was the fifth largest corporation in the country with $28.4 billion in profits. They don't actually provide any health care. Their wealth is built entirely off of the exploitation of patients in the state of Minnesota and workers like me. Working in patient care conditions inside of Minnesota hospitals are very difficult and they continue to get worse. My health system within the last 6 months underwent some systematic planned staffing cuts in its largest hospitals, mostly centered in the metro area. We were told this was because health system finances were under pressure. It doesn't seem ethical or moral to me to cut nurses that are required to keep patients safe and healing when we know that just about every other industry that touches the hospital, including pharmaceuticals and medical device companies, are paying CEOs really exorbitant salaries and posting record profits. On top of that, major healthcare corporations like United also receive billions of dollars in tax breaks every year. Healthcare is the most heavily subsidized industry in the United States. Minnesotans not only pay for much of their own private healthcare via their insurance plans, they pay again as taxpayers when we cover care for those excluded from the private markets. In Minnesota, we even have gotten in the habit of paying insurers hundreds of millions of dollars in extra reinsurance just in hopes that these companies don't raise our rates, which they do anyway. So yes, I would like to know how much healthcare profiteers are earning out of the pockets of me and my patients and how much they're receiving in tax breaks from the general public. I think that this is information all Minnesotans should have. Large profitable corporations have created this broken system that Minnesota nurses are now struggling to maintain. Our union, the Minnesota Nurses Association, believes that Minnesotans have a right to know how much large corporations are earning in Minnesota profits, how much they're receiving in Minnesota tax breaks, and how much they're paying in Minnesota taxes. This is something that we already require of nonprofit hospitals, and we should extend that requirement to all large corporations. This is the least that we can ask of the corporations that are profiting off the sick and the vulnerable. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next, Julie Thompson. On deck is Beth Cadoon. Thank you so much for being here.
Good afternoon, Chair Gomez, committee. I am Pastor Julie Thompson of St. Stephen Lutheran Church in White Bear Lake. As a clergy person, I see people in my congregation and in the broader community who are struggling. I have people in my suburban congregation who are facing homelessness. Others have difficulty in getting mental health support for themselves or for family members. Others are on waiting lists for services for their children. Older citizens struggle to stay in their homes because they do not have transportation options after they can no longer drive. There are programs and policies that are designed to help these people to continue to live safe and productive lives. But sadly, there are not always the public resources available to make sure that everyone who needs help gets it. We expect our elected leaders to make informed and just decisions about how we raise and spend revenue to build a Minnesota where all of us can thrive. But our elected leaders need accurate information to make these decisions. In addition, we as Minnesotans have a right to know what wealthy corporations make in profits, what Minnesota state tax breaks they receive, and how much they're paying in Minnesota state taxes. You will likely hear from corporations that do not want to make this information easily available to the public and to lawmakers. But to that, I would quote the words of Jesus. All who do evil hate the light and refuse to go near it for fear their sins will be exposed. But those who do what is right come to the light so that others can see that they are doing what God wants. I urge you to support House File 4513. Thank you.
Thank you, Pastor Thompson. Up next is Beth Cadoon. Welcome to the committee. Welcome back to the committee. I don't know. Have we heard from you, Ms. Cadoon, this year?
I think on
the very first bill, of course. Welcome back.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Beth Cadoon. I represent the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. We're an organization of about 6,300 businesses across the state of all sizes, small, medium, and large. We do oppose this bill as it violates the longstanding principles of taxpayer confidentiality, likely runs afoul of federal law that prohibits states from releasing tax return information, and undermines Minnesota's competitiveness, as other states do not require similar public disclosure of confidential tax return information. Taxpayers have a justifiable expectation of privacy on tax information they provide, and confidentiality of tax returns is a longstanding policy principle at both the state and federal level. IRS Code 6103 provides that tax returns are not subject to public disclosure and prohibits sharing of federal information with states unless they have similar safeguards. The sharing of information has been important at the state level to help in compliance efforts and tax enforcement. Minnesota's tax system is based on federal law, and the returns and information are very intertwined. I'm not sure how Minnesota could actually enact this type of disclosure without running afoul of that federal law. For example, if you look at the corporate franchise return M4, the first three lines ask about the federal return information. If you look at form M41 on the income calculations for corporate franchise tax, line one, corporations required to put their federal taxable income. Line 2A, federal deduction for taxes paid on net income and minimum fee. Line 2B, federal deduction for capital losses. Line 2C, federal deduction for federal income taxes. And there's more of those lines, so I won't go through them all. Minnesota would be an outlier, as other states do not require this disclosure. There was a similar bill that was just moving in Maine this year. That bill is now was just amended this last week to provide aggregate data and not this type of disclosure. And that's similar in other states that do not do that. Aggregate data is something that current law allows. We think that's the better approach to get at the taxpayer information. We do believe that there's some great resources at the Department of Revenue that already aggregates this data. There's some great resources in your packets today from House Research that looks at, you know, effective tax rates. It shows that Minnesota corporations have an effective tax rate of 8.43%. I would mention with that effective tax rate, we have, as you know, the number one statutory rate in the nation at 9.8. With that effective tax rate, we're still higher than I think 42 other states' statutory rate. And realize that other states also effective tax rates would be lower because most states have single sales factor, research and development tax credit, and other things. The testifier you had in committee yesterday mentioned that other countries that are looking at more tax disclosure. A discussion of this type of disclosure is more appropriate at a country level, not especially for our multinational companies. There are competitive ramifications for states if they try to impose additional regulations such as this at the state level. It adds another barrier to companies looking to invest and grow in our state. As now if they invest here, there would be sensitive information would be made public and also available to their competitors. We encourage policymakers to focus on laws to improve our state's competitiveness, not add additional burdens that will undermine investment and growth with requirements that are not imposed in other states or at the federal level. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Cadoon. Representative Greenman's a lawyer. I'm sure she's going to appreciate engaging with those legal assertions, but we'll have to wait until we're done with the testimony. Next up is Chris Lavella, and then Mr. Hansen, you're on deck after that. Welcome to the committee. Thanks for being here. Just remember to read your name off as you go ahead with your testimony, please, for the record. Thanks.
Chair Gomez and members of the committee, my name is Chris Lavella. I am a security officer with more than 20 years experience in the industry. I've worked for various subcontractors in the metro area. I'm also a proud member of SEIU Local 26. As a security officer, I've worked for and protected many of the largest corporations in Minnesota, but I have never been employed by them because large corporations prefer to move rank and file workers like me into subcontracted positions with outside firms. That is just one example of the ways in which large, powerful corporations have eaten away at the social contract that used to sustain a thriving middle class. Corporations like the ones I help protect used to be engines of upward mobility, but it is obvious now that they are more focused on quick profits rather than long-term investment in their workers and communities. Now, while they earn good record profits, my coworkers and I struggle to earn a living wage and negotiate fair contracts. Corporations headquartered in Minnesota benefit from the infrastructure, workers, and environment that we have all created. And I think it is fair that we should know how much they are contributing to that shared obligation. Being a subcontractor means we can be removed from the client's premises, often without giving a reason for the removal. There is no such thing as job security as an employee of a subcontractor. This type of worker intimidation is common and makes it very difficult for our union to effectively represent us. I have personally seen this play out time and time again in my years working in the security industry. As Minnesota workers, we keep these corporations running. And as individual taxpayers, we don't get to write off our rent or groceries, and we certainly do not have lawyers and accountants that can hide our earnings in foreign tax havens. When I think about the corporations that earn enormous profits on the backs of workers like me, I think the absolute least we can do is know how much they are earning in Minnesota and make sure that they are paying their full rightful liabilities back into the communities that make their profits possible. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Up next, Gavin Hansen.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the Tax Committee. My name is Gavin Hansen, and I'm here today on behalf of the Minnesota Business Partnership. I appreciate the opportunity to address House File 4513, a bill that seeks to mandate the disclosure of state franchise tax information. The MBP, which consists of over 100 CEOs and senior executives of Minnesota's largest employers, collectively employing approximately 4.8 million individuals worldwide, including nearly 500,000 here in Minnesota, values this opportunity to offer our perspective. At the heart of our mission is ensuring that Minnesota remains competitive in the global business economy. House File 4513 presents a substantial hurdle to this objective. If passed, this bill would place Minnesota companies at a distinct competitive disadvantage, as no other state in the nation imposes such a stringent tax disclosure requirement. We have identified several key concerns regarding 4513. First, the bill discloses sensitive private taxpayer information. This raises significant privacy and security concerns. Second, the ambiguity surrounding the potential utilization and interpretation of this disclosed information by competitors, other states, foreign nations, and the general public introduces serious uncertainty and risk for Minnesota businesses. Third, the bill's implementation would complicate the process of disclosing state tax information without simultaneously revealing federal information, given that the Minnesota state returns start with federal income. This creates logistical challenges and potential legal conflicts. Fourth, the disclosure requirements could lead to the publication of returns involved in ongoing audits, appeals, or litigation, further exacerbating the risk of unintended consequences and legal complications. It is important to recognize that the businesses targeted by House File 4513 already adhere to existing laws and regulations, undergoing rigorous IRS audits to maintain their compliance. Relevant agencies possess the authority to access tax returns as needed, making this proposed legislation unnecessary. House File 4513 would mandate the public disclosure of confidential tax information, placing Minnesota companies at a disadvantage and exposing them to undue risk from out-of-state competitors. Why should we penalize our homegrown businesses and undermine their competitiveness? I urge the committee to consider the broader implications of House File 4513 and its detrimental effects on our state's economic competitiveness. Thank you for your attention to this critical issue.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Finally, we have Ida Ali. Welcome to the committee. Thanks for being here. Just remember to say your name for the record as you're getting started with your testimony, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Eid Ali, and I'm the president of Minnesota Uber and Lyft Drivers Association, also known as MULDA. It's an organization that advocates for the drivers, and as many of you are aware of, we have had a bill last year that was vetoed by the governor. I'm here for a different aspect today here. I'm happy to be here today to testify in front of HF 4513, which required large corporations to publicly disclose how much money they make and how much taxes they pay in Minnesota. Minnesotans rely on our drivers to get to and from their destinations safely and efficiently. It's important work that should create good jobs. But instead, drivers like me struggle to earn a living, and we have chaos in the ride-sharing industry because greedy corporations have inserted themselves as a dominant middleman and refused to pay a living wage. In fact, even though corporations like Uber and Lyft control how much we earn, they do not pay us wage at all because we are classified as independent contractors. Our drivers are forced to provide their own cars, buy their own gas, pay their own insurances, and even cover their own payroll taxes. That arrangement means lower costs to Uber and Lyft, but much lower earnings for the drivers. On top of that, we know that the large corporations benefit from many special tax breaks that are not available to regular workers and small businesses. I hope, as elected representatives of the people, you will work towards a more clear and honest tax code that treats all businesses equally. Right now, Uber and Lyft are threatening to leave Minnesota because drivers are demanding fair wages. To me, there could be no clear sign that corporations are drunk on power and that they do not believe their profit depend on an able and willing workforce. Uber and Lyft insist that they cannot afford to pay us more. For thousands of drivers like me, our livelihood depends on the whim of these enormous corporations. I think that gives us a right to know if they are telling the truth. We have right to know how much money they are making off of our labor and how much they are paying in taxes. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ali, for being here. So that concludes the testimony from people who had signed up previously. Is there anybody else present who wishes to testify? I'm not seeing anybody come up, and so we're going to move to member discussion. Representative Davids.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I would like to know if the Department of Revenue supports this bill.
Ms. Bears? Thanks for being here.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Joanna Bears. I'm the Legislative Director at the Minnesota Department of Revenue. And Madam Chair, Representative Davids, we have no policy position on this bill.
Thank you, Ms. Bears. Representative Davids.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That was smooth. The pastor talked about quoting Jesus and about sins. And this is just rhetorical. What sins are the corporations, what are they sinning about? I thought that was a very interesting comment. And then the author of the bill talked about the secrecy of the tax code. How secret is the tax code? All there. The tax code is all there. There's no secret that I'm aware of in the tax code. If there were some, I'd like to know because I'd probably use them. And of course, this bill clearly violates federal law. But, and this is a serious question to the author of the bill. You mentioned that corporations need to pay their fair share. What is that number?
I believe that the pastor was talking about the shining a light on things rather than implying that anybody was sinning, but saying that, you know, when a light is shown, those who don't have sin don't have to worry about it. But we'll go to Representative.
Madam Chair, you might want to listen to the tape on that.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Lee Davids. And as a Jew, I couldn't expound on Jesus, but I will take the chair's and your word for it. To your question about a fair share, you know, I believe in a democracy. Our constituents to decide what is fair and how those rules work to what we are contributing and the resources we share together. I also think we need information to determine that. And I think that one of the testifiers talked about sort of the appropriate authorities have the information they already need, but I'm looking at the tax committee, and I don't think you have this information. Correct me if I'm wrong. but it's hard for me to understand how you guys could make that decision without knowing, especially when we're talking about our biggest companies, who I think we heard about the impact that they're having far beyond just sort of what they're selling, threatening to pull out, controlling sort of the health insurance decisions that they make. And so when I think about what the right answer to our fair share is, I think that in a democracy, it should be the voters and our communities that decide that answer.
Representative Davids.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Different twist on my fair share. Just so everybody knows, if anybody sits at that table and says fair share, they're going to get the question because I still don't have an answer what that is. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Greenman, we've heard a few references and testimony and, from Representative Davids about the sort of legal issues. So I wonder if I could, before we just move on to other questions, if you could address that briefly, Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So we designed this specifically and with the help to ensure that we do not run afoul of 6108. And that the information, and if you look in the fiscal note, it says no federal tax information will be disclosed. There is no state law that prevents its disclosure, or when we pass this law, I should say, if we pass this law, the state can decide that. And there are no other sort of provisions that prevent us from doing this. Corporations get their charter from the people of Minnesota and the state of Minnesota. We decide what their rights and responsibilities are. And one of those things might be having transparency into how much money they're making and also how much we're spending on tax expenditures that are going to their benefit.
Thank you, Representative Greenman. Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative Greenman, for this bill. I missed this when you were presenting, and if I did, then my apologies. But if you could just talk about the comparison with other forms of legal entities, and this kind of builds on what you were just saying. We have these entities that don't have flesh and blood. They exist only as creations of the law, and many of them have requirements of transparency, whether because they're nonprofit corporations or because they're publicly traded entities. And just so the idea that, like, this is disclosing something that would be really shocking for a legal entity to disclose, if you could just expand on that. Thanks.
Thank you. Representative Greenman.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Pinto. And I think that that's an important point because, you know, the federal law exists because lawmakers decided it did, it not because of some inherent right. Again, we at the state level charter our corporations. As you were referring to, if you go online and look at a 990 from a nonprofit, it is in all this information and more, and so there is a regime of disclosure that fits the purpose of that. What the disclosure is required for in publicly traded companies, there's a calculation that lawmakers made at the federal level that people need that information to make sure that the markets work and good investments, and make sure that when the public is shareholders, there's some transparency there. In this case, I think we should make the policy decision that both the public and lawmakers need this information when you're going to make decisions about the $1 billion of expenditures that go to corporations. Like, is that a good use of our resources, or should we be putting it towards education? It might be a good use of our resources. You know, it might be that the deductions for interest and the deductions for charitable contributions and are actually in the R&D are doing their job. But I don't know how you know that right now, especially not looking at the biggest corporations. And so I think it's a policy decision, and we very carefully crafted this so that we don't run afoul of federal law, but the decision of what we do at the state level is ours and yours to make.
Thank you, Chair Pinto. Up next, Representative Witte.
Thank you, Chair. Representative, I appreciate your passion for this. So is this done in any other state currently?
Representative Greenman?
No, it's not.
Representative Witte?
And our tax rate is at 9.85, one of the highest in the country. My question would be, You know, there's a lot of great Minnesota companies that started off in the basements and the garages and really have kind of been leaders throughout the country. I think of Target. I think of Best Buy, General Mills. Are there any unintended consequences that could hurt these companies, like with other companies outside the area, knowing some of their information that could, you know, be used against them? Thank you.
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Weedy, for allowing me to clarify a piece of this bill. So this applies to all companies in the United States making over $250 million a year if they have any sales in Minnesota. And so an Amazon and a Target, if they are, if sort of they reach that threshold, there's not a specific, and that was important because I think to your point, it's important, and we know that lots of these corporations, these big corporations, are having an incredible amount of influence, even when they're not headquartered here. What I will say is I hear unintended consequences, slippery slope, anti-competitive. I hear those a lot of those terms a lot in a lot of the bills I'm working on. And one of the things that I think is clear is that we heard that last year, and we heard that the year before, and we heard that year before that, and we heard the year before that. And I'm looking at these slides, and I'm looking at the forecast and saying, well, corporate revenues are going up, profits are going up. And so either we don't trust that, or it just isn't happening. It isn't true. And I think part of the things that makes Minnesota a great place to do business is that we have a thriving democracy. We have a thriving economy. We have people who are invested in their community. And one of the things we're saying here is people are questioning whether they have power in our democracy. They're questioning small businesses are questioning whether they can compete with Amazon or with, you know, United Health or whatever it is. And so I think that this is about that too. This only cuts at $250 million. So most businesses in Minnesota, the little guys, right, aren't going to disclose. Now, we can make a policy decision different than that. But what I think the important questions are really about those businesses that are big enough that they're exerting influence not just by what they buy and sell, but they're actually exerting influence on our daily life. They're what we're hearing the public talk about. And they're, frankly, exerting influence in the halls of power at every level. And so those are the ones that we're starting with to make sure. We just know, again, how much are they paying in to make sure that, you know, our roads are built and our kids are getting a good education. And I think, again, we hear about how much taxes corporations are paying. I sort of expected my friend Gavin Hansen to come and say, this will allow us to tell you, and I don't mean to pick on you.
It's okay to pick on Gavin, just for the record, in tax committee. Just kidding.
But in all seriousness, this will allow, right, if corporations are paying it into our corporate into our government coffers, we'll see that too, right? That tells a story too. This is just that data. So this is the what's happening in Minnesota minus the federal piece.
Representative Whitty.
Thank you for that. I know they're the fabric of our great state. They all have foundations. They all help in many different ways, and obviously those pieces can be seen also. But I do get worried about what the consequences could be. But also, you know, looking at the data, not so much about leaving the state, but are they expanding in our state because we're putting so many pieces on them. And that's where I think our great citizens of Minnesota kind of lose because they're not expanding and they're not creating those jobs that I think they want. So. I look forward to seeing more of this and hearing where the data goes with it. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Whitty. Up next, Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Greenman. Welcome to the Most Fun Committee. We always have a great time here. So if it's your first time, you've been missing out. I have so many questions, honestly. I appreciate you bringing this bill. I think you know I probably am not going to be supporting it. And my first concern is, I think that anti-competitiveness goes without saying. I mean, if we are the only state doing this, like, we already are the highest corporate tax rate,
we already have this complete outlier guilty tax. We already have found lots of ways to make, to disincentivize corporations to be here, and this is just adding fuel to that fire. But I am worried about the legality of it, and I know you briefly addressed that, but you know, maybe the bill is inconsistent or maybe it needs more clarification, but it says the corporations in line 1.11, corporations' corporate franchise tax return would be available on a website, and all corporate franchise tax forms relating to the calculation of income, apportionment, and calculation of tax. Like, that data is coming from their federal return. So how could it not be then disclosed?
This is referring to data that's on the M4, but I'll go to Representative Greenman.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Robbins. And I do want to come back. I don't know if you guys want me back, but I do want to come back.
Well, next time Representative Davids is going to insist that you bring some treats. I had to like calm the furor over here when they heard that this was your first time in committee. I was like, it's okay that she doesn't have donuts, but next time, Representative Greenman.
That is an unintended consequence.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Davids, I was not aware of that, but I would have brought them if... if you look at 1.16, it says it does not authorize the commissioner to disclose a corporation's federal return or federal information. And that's also what the fiscal note says. And so based on the M4s, right, excluding this information, that's what will be made publicly available.
Representative Robbins?
Thank you. I would just submit that I'm not sure it's just because the statute says that in those different places, I'm not sure it's not still in conflict. And I would expect in the fiscal note, they say they have a 0.25 cost for a lawyer. My guess is they're probably going to need to increase that. So my next point, Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Robbins, please continue.
Thank you. I want to kind of just address the overall tenor that somehow all these companies are evil and they're greedy, and the disparagement of these companies today has been kind of shocking, I have to say. And I'm not saying everyone's a good actor. I do think most people are, whether big business, small business. I think most job creators are acting in good faith. They provide really good jobs. They provide innovation. They provide so many opportunities for our state. And I think at every turn, it feels like we are trying to push them out the door. And I just, perhaps, Madam Chair, at some other hearing, we could have the deed commissioner come. Because I've been in meetings with the deed commissioner, and they sing off a totally different song sheet. They're like, we want more companies. We want to attract more investment. We want to provide all these incentives that now are seen as greedy. Like deed actively recruits companies here with big tax breaks. And we're constantly trying to incentivize business to come and grow and be part of the fabric of our communities. And I feel like this is really undermining that and misunderstanding how the economy works. All the things that my colleagues on the other side of the aisle want to invest in, the money for that investment comes from economic growth. And if we don't have companies here to create jobs, create growth, increase our state GDP, then we have less available to invest in all of the priorities that we all care about. And I think, I don't know where the fair share line is, and I'm not sure any of us do or our constituents do, but the markets tend to work. And the more we pile on mandates and then requirements, and I just feel like we are really undermining our ability. What we really need in a previous demographic thing is we need to attract labor and we need to attract capital to Minnesota. We are long-term trends bad on both. And this is not pushing us in that direction. So I'm just encouraging people. I love the whoever the testifier was that said, do the aggregate data. I think we probably already do that. We know a lot about what corporations pay in taxes. That was what bumped up the forecast this last time, was the increase in corporate profits. So we know a lot of how much they pay. I think in the tax incident study, we figure out what they're getting in tax expenditures at a macro level. So we can follow those trends, but to make them disclose publicly, individually by company, I just think is a great disservice to our state and our competitiveness, and I would urge members to not support this.
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Robbins. I guess to start, disclosure is not a punishment. It's not a punishment when you're a publicly traded company and you have to disclose, and it's not a punishment when you're a nonprofit and you have to disclose, and I don't think that it is taken that way. It's taken as a tool to make sure that for corporations, for nonprofits, that that entities that have great public trust and weight, that the public, the taxpayers, investors, lawmakers actually have some transparency in there. So I, again, this is a simple bill. I have very few bills that are only one page. Come talk to me in labor. And so this, you can read it. This is not a punishment. It is a tool of information that we see in other entities. And I hear you on the, I was on workforce the last couple of years, and I think that one of the things we're trying to figure out is, are the investments that we've made working? But we actually don't know if the R&D credit is working. If we don't know, is it just the corporations that have the best accountants? Or is it folks who are actually investing here in our districts and our communities? This is a tool of information. And the last thing I'd say, I think what you're hearing, and I think particularly you hear the language, I mean, when I, in my community, but like words like greedy and all that stuff, like people are frustrated. And they're frustrated because it feels like their health insurance keeps going up and they're not getting more for it and nobody knows where it's going. They're frustrated because their employer is squeezing them. I mean, you heard common labor. We hear it from across the sectors in the economy where people feel like they're being deprived even of the government benefits. You heard that unemployment insurance, workers' comp, it doesn't matter. And so I think that what you're hearing behind those words is a deep frustration. And what I think we should take it as lawmakers is an obligation to act. To act in a way, and again, this is just transparency. I think we probably need to act on the information that we have, but in order to make good decisions, we actually have to have that information. And so I don't think that it is inconsistent with what I think we need to do here in Minnesota, which is make it a great place to be a worker, make it a great place to open a small business, make sure we have fair markets where those small businesses can compete, which is another piece of this that I think, make sure we have tax fairness. And again, if corporations sort of are paying more than they should, or if the expenditures are working, great, let's see it, we'll see it. Again, there's nothing, disclosure is not a punishment. It's not a punishment for nonprofits, and it's not a punishment for publicly traded companies.
All right. Okay, we can do one more, but we're getting a little tight on time, and we have a couple other folks on the list, but Representative Robbins.
Sorry. Thank you. I appreciate the exchange. And I would just argue that same frustration is what we hear in our communities too all the time from workers and from small businesses who feel like they are getting mandated, which is driving their costs up, and they can't even keep their doors open or pay their workers to attract workers, which is why they can't afford to pay what the market's demanding from workers with all the increased costs. And they see all these mandates on schools and the huge investment in schools, and they don't know where that money went. And they feel like they're paying all these taxes and paying all these increased costs, and they can't, you know, keep the lights on in their business or pay their property taxes. Like, that frustration is really strong. And a lot of those reasons that people are frustrated are because of government policies that we have put on them. And so perhaps that shared frustration from different angles is, you know, a place we could work on together. But I would say that requiring all these companies to put their tax forms out there is not going to solve the frustration. What's going to solve the frustration is allowing people to run their businesses, to make decisions that are in the best interest of their workers, because one size doesn't fit all. And I hope that we can get to a place of looking at that perspective too. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Robbins. We do allow ourselves to go a little far afield in taxes, but I want to remind everybody that we're talking about a basic disclosure of companies with $250 million or more in sales, that we're not asking companies to actually take any action, that we're asking the Department of Revenue to just share that information. So I had a lot in that, but if we could stay a little bit more focused, that would be great. Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'll try to stay focused and brief. Maybe you should go to someone else.
All right. Sorry. We'll come back to you. Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick question, maybe to nonpartisan staff, but just kind of looking at the bill. So it's not the bill just specifies companies that have 250 million sales domestically.
I'll go to Mr. Klayman, if that's okay. Mr. Klayman.
Madam Chair, Representative Swazinski, yes, that's correct. It's aggregate domestic sales.
Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So companies that not necessarily 250 million of sales in Minnesota. Okay, so just to clarify that. And then, do the companies have to, in order to meet these requirements, do they have to be domestically located to make this report?
Mr. Klayman. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, that's fine.
Okay.
You're doing great.
Thank you.
Madam Chair and Representative Swazinski, so it would apply to any corporation subject to the corporate franchise tax, and that's so basically if you're a corporation that's headquartered somewhere else but you're making sales in the state, you have that corporate franchise tax return requirement, and then if you hit that $250 million aggregate sales threshold, then the return information for that taxpayer would then be subject to the disclosure requirements.
Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And then just kind of a follow along those same lines. So if you're a domestically based business, will that potentially even, that information, would that be available to international based corporations?
Mr. Klayman.
Madam Chair, Representative Swazinski, if you have an internationally based corporation that's making sales in Minnesota and is subject to the corporate franchise tax, then the disclosure requirement will also apply to them as well.
Representative Swazinski.
Sounds good. Thank you, Madam Chair. So just, I think just to put it, so as long as if you're not selling in the United States, if you're not selling in Minnesota, would that consider, Madam Chair, would you be subject to this requirement if you are not, if you have a corporate governance that doesn't allow for the sale, so a direct sale, so maybe through a secondary sale, if you're selling it to Minnesota? So let's say you're not directly selling to Minnesota, you've got corporate governance that says you're not, but you maybe have secondary sellers or potentially folks that are taking your product and selling it on the secondary market into Minnesota. Are you required to make that same disclosure?
Mr. Klayman?
Madam Chair and members, I think the answer would be no if you're not making sales into the state. So if you're selling to a distributor that then makes sales into the state, it would be the distributor that then would be subject to the if they're a corporation, would be subject to the franchise tax disclosure requirement. Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think one of the things that we should always keep in mind is I understand folks want to use language like paying your fair share and the rest. And when we're talking about these, there's not corporate giveaways. This is just whether or not we're allowing businesses to keep their profits. It's not like the state of Minnesota is writing checks to these businesses. It's just we're just letting them keep what they earned, whether they're a small business, a large business, a large corporation, a small corporation. I think we need to be really careful with the language that we use, that this money is the business's money. This money is the individuals who made the money, not the state of Minnesota's, right? Like, we can't give away something that is not ours, right? We, because we have the power of the purse, we have the power of, you know, if you don't pay your taxes, you're going to go to jail. So essentially, you know, at the end of a muzzle or a stick, you're encouraged to pay these taxes. So when we allow businesses or individuals to keep their money, it's not a giveaway. It's, that's just their money that we're not taking from them. And, you know, I think we're having domestic businesses opening their books for the world to see. And I don't say that lightly. You know, this, the reason why this isn't being done in any other state is because we understand that international markets matter, and that if we allow our books for our domestically business, located business that are making sales, that are focusing here on the domestic product, by giving an unfair advantage to international businesses that maybe currently aren't in this market, to understand our practices, to see how the business model works, to see where profits can be made, profits can be lost, they're going to be able to have inside information that we just share with the world for businesses to come into the United States and compete and push out even local. So while we're saying, well, we just, you know, these nasty businesses, well, there's nastier international ones that maybe don't have market share here yet. And if we open these books to them and allow this just to be willy-nilly public information, we're going to disadvantage domestic businesses. You know, China doesn't do this. China doesn't open their books to say, hey, hey, Minnesota business or America business, here's our books. This is how we operate. This is how our profit centers go, right? Like, it's right there. Oh, shoot. Well, I guess we don't have that advantage of seeing how they work, but they now can see how we, these businesses do it. And, you know, we should create a business around that and model it and just happen to have sales less than $250 million so we don't have to worry about it. Shoot. And then we'll just direct sell it right into those states and compete with domestic producers. And, you know, I just don't think that, you know, what however you feel about an international business that's at least willing to locate domestically. You know, it was said earlier that if we don't do something, all these businesses are going to conglomerate and be one business. Well, my fear is that if we have a punitive tax policy where we refer to businesses as greedy and nasty and less than and what we deserve, you know, I agree. We will probably just have one corporation in Minnesota because all the rest of them have left. And, you know, I think, you know, this is fun to just kind of play, you know, whack-a-mole and say, hey, you over there and that's part of the state or you part of the country, you've kind of risen up, you've stuck your head out of the little wood box, whack, Minnesota whacks you in the head and beats you back down. And guess what? Now you're back down below the box, and now over here there's going to be another one. We've all seen the games at the carnivals, and this business kind of been fighting and trying to make things work from energy law to tax law to all these things, and they kind of happen to raise up, and all of a sudden now your books are open to international business. Whack! Minnesota comes and gives you a good beat down.
Sorry, can we wrap up? I'm just looking at the clock.
Certainly.
Thank you.
I'll stop talking, Madam Chair.
I would never ask you to stop talking, Representative Sinzinski. But I have to say, at the beginning of your comments, I was like, oh, maybe we can move on to Representative Joachim, but I absolutely have to turn it over to Representative Greenman because I think she's a...
I shouldn't have started coughing.
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Sinzinski. And China isn't the market economy I think we should model our laws on. When I took college, high school economics, the number one assumption is transparency and perfect information, right? We don't have that. But price transparency is actually critical to fair markets. And I don't think anyone argue that China has a fair market. And so I think we should think about what's best for us here in Minnesota. And I would just say, I think, and I'm sure you guys have this conversation a lot, but, you know, when I think about what taxes are, right, they're the cost of doing business to live in a society that has roads to drive on, a workforce that's educated, infrastructure so your water is clean, That's not something that comes on its own out of the magic, right? That is about how we all, as communities, as workers and business owners, as families and consumers, we're all part of that. That's what taxes are. And so I think that what we're talking about here is whether or not we think, as lawmakers or the public, that those are the tax expenditures that we're spending our collective resources on are working and are advancing our goals. And I think that that's fundamentally a question for we the people, for democracy, and that's why we need this information.
Representative Joachim.
Oh, I hate to go after the author, but thank you. I will just say thank you for bringing this bill forward. And I like the latitude you give in committee to have these deep discussions. I will say aggregated data does not always tell you the whole story. Sometimes you have to disaggregate. And I must have missed a lot when I stepped out in the hallway, because I came back in and all of a sudden we were on a completely different bill. From my understanding, this bill just helps us get information to make evidence-based decisions on how we're spending taxpayer dollars. In education realm, we like disaggregated data. We try to focus on evidence-based. And we also like to think of mandates as accountability. And we need accountability so that we're accountable to our taxpayer dollars to make sure we're spending them wisely and investing in not just people in Minnesota, but our businesses too. And earlier on, three businesses were mentioned that we're so very proud of. They grew out of research at the U of M. They are publicly traded companies that are already disclosing this information. So all we're asking here in your bill, from my understanding, is to make sure that we get the information so we can be wise with our taxpayer investments. And I just want to thank you for that.
Thank you, Representative Joachim. That's the end of the list. Rep. Greenman, you just gave what I thought was a great closing, but I'm going to go back to you if you have anything more to add.
I will just say, Madam Chair, and I really appreciate this discussion. This is a lot of fun, this committee. I should get on it next time. what I would just say again is that we have made choices at the federal level, in the nonprofit space, in the publicly traded company space, to require disclosure because it fit our policy goals. That's the same thing here. And I think as lawmakers, as members of the public, you heard the public talk about the way we can use this information. I think just disclosing and having that transparency, giving voters and all of us who represent those voters the right to know and be able to assess our policy is just good policy. And I think it would go a long way to ensure that as Minnesotans, and I think we all have raised, have feelings about sort of the big powerful interests and the big powerful corporations, that they actually, that transparency will help build some kind of trust with the public. So with that, Madam Chair, I would ask for you to support my bill being laid over and included.
There we go. All right. Thank you so much, Representative Greenman. Well done. With that, the chair is going to renew her motion that House File 4513 be laid over for possible inclusion in the 2024 tax bill. And it is laid over. All right. Maybe we can do Chair Howard's bill a little quicker. If we need to have more discussion, though, we can certainly take some time at our next meeting to get back into it. Yeah. You want to come back tonight? Representative Swedzinski wants us to come back tonight. I'm a night owl, so like anytime after 10 is good with me. Chair Howard, would you like to move that House File 4535 be laid over for possible inclusion in the 2024 tax bill?
Yes, Madam Chair. So moved.
All right. Representative Howard has moved his bill. Representative Howard, to your bill.
I will be brief, Chair, because this is a pretty straightforward bill. And it dovetails with the conversation we've been having over the last few days here. And I would start just by asking a question to the committee. And should corporations pay taxes in Minnesota according to the profits they earn doing business here in Minnesota, just like all our small businesses do? And I would hope the committee would answer yes. And if that's true, then it begs a few more questions. How much is it costing the state of Minnesota when these corporations shelter their profits overseas? And how can we create a tax policy, create a tax policy that prevents this kind of fundamental unfairness where large multinational corporations get to play by different rules to avoid paying taxes? And that's ultimately what this bill seeks to do, is answer questions. so that we can assess whether our state can create a better, fairer tax system for Minnesotans as it relates to corporate tax avoidance. Members, we had a version of this conversation last year with legislation around worldwide reporting. That's one of the tools to prevent this corporate tax avoidance that this study would seek to investigate. And we know this is happening. You know, an illustration comes from a study in recent years that showed profits of U.S.-controlled subsidiaries in the Cayman Islands reported 1,000% of that island's entire GDP in those profits. And so we know that this is happening, but do we know the extent to which it impacts our taxes and what we're collecting here in Minnesota? That's partly what this study would help us understand. You know, we may disagree on the merits of worldwide reporting, but I think we all could agree that policymakers would benefit from more information about whether this idea has promise, what are the benefits and risks, and how could something like this be implemented here in Minnesota. And when you look at the huge sums of money that are sheltered overseas and its impact on the state's long-term ability to meet the needs of our citizens, I think it's warranted that we dig deep, that we study this issue, and there's benefit for us to have all this information and come together to see if it's an idea that brings merit next year. So with that, I would open it for any questions, Chair Gomez.
Thank you, Representative Howard. We do have one testifier signed up to speak. Eric Bernstein, welcome to the committee. Welcome back to the committee. I don't know if I've seen you this year either. I don't think so. Welcome to the committee for the first time, 2020.
I've tried to give everybody a break. Chair Gomez and members of the committee, thank you for having me. My name is Eric Bernstein, and I direct We Make Minnesota, which is a coalition of labor and grassroots organizations united in support of an equitable and just state budget. I'm happy to be here to speak in support of HF 4535. Which just studies the issue of multinational tax avoidance. This is an issue of international consensus, and although we made progress last session by conforming to federal guilty provisions and others, we did not resolve that issue. The legislature came close, but did not quite get to adopting worldwide combined reporting, as we just heard. At the time, there were questions raised about the validity of DOR's revenue estimate and their ability to implement the policy. On a technical note, I would just like to point out, because I feel compelled to defend DOR's honor, that questions about the revenue estimate were later proven quite specious. There were an expert letter written to leadership in the House and Senate and the governor that talked about various revenue estimates from outside sources, including the California Franchise Tax Board, which placed DOR's estimate in a very reasonable range. But there were legitimate questions outside of the revenue estimate about states' ability to implement a policy like worldwide combined reporting or other policies that would address multinational tax avoidance. And we should answer those questions, and that's what this study would do. It's pro-equity between big and small business, and it would be good for everybody to know this information. So I really appreciate Chair Howard or Representative Howard bringing it, and I hope you will consider including it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bernstein. Moving to member discussion, Representative Davids.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. If the department could come down. I think it's very important to know on some of these bills where they are at. I mean, do they really need to do another study or?
Welcome back, Ms. Barris. Representative Davids.
Does the department support this bill?
Ms. Bears.
Madam Chair, Representative Davids, we have no position on this bill.
Thank you, Ms. Bears. Representative Davids.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Any further? Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just looking at the bill, I was glad to see that there's no extra funds appropriated to the conducting of this study, but looking at the fiscal note, looking that it's about $655,000 that it's going to cost the Department of Revenue to conduct this study. Based off of the last report and study that we received, at the cost of about $3,300 taxpayer dollars per page of the last study, I hope this next one is at least 198 pages. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Olson. Is there any further member discussion? All right, not seeing any. Representative Howard, any final thoughts you'd like to share with us?
Madam Chair and members, I appreciate that the conversation and would hope that this could be included in a potential tax bill. Thank you.
Excellent. With that, Rep. Howard renews his motion that House File 4535 be laid over for possible inclusion in the 2024 tax bill, and it is laid over. After today's excitement, I think we need a little policy and technical bill tomorrow to keep everybody in everybody's interest. I hope everyone who's here comes back for that and other scintillating topics. We'll be meeting tomorrow, Thursday, March 7th at 1 o'clock. And with that, we are adjourned.